SARS-CoV-2 COVID-19 Update 7. By Rookwood. I'm confused. While the UK spirals downwards towards financial and commercial Armageddon, escalating mental health issues, domestic violence and societal breakdown, I cannot find any clause in the Coronavirus Act 2020 that gives members of the UK government, or indeed their advisers, any special privilege or dispensation concerning the current social distancing measures. My confusion is further reinforced by the continual hypnotic mantra that we are all in this together, when the past couple of months has demonstrated more than ever that we are not. Dominic Cummings, it appears to many, is one of a favored band of individuals who seem completely impervious to implications of the 11th commandment: do not get caught. The longer this farce carries on, the more convoluted the narrative becomes. A familiar and sorry echo of the whole coronavirus saga. Irrespective of the number of trips Dominic Cummings actually made to Durham, or indeed the true reasons and motives behind this journey, his actions have seriously undermined both the government and any potential lockdown measures implemented at a later date. The skeptic would read into this a perfect example of an approved misdemeanor, facilitated to bring more swinging legislation to bear upon the long-suffering public to clarify matters further and prevent any further occurrence of dissidence. After all, it is easier to seek forgiveness than permission. The only apparent good to come of all of this mess is the high satirical comedy furnished by Led by Donkeys, an anti-Brexit pressure group, who hired a mobile video van to replay the PM's stay-at-home message at considerable volume outside the home of the aforementioned advisor. Try as I might, I can find very little solid ground to stand upon from which to defend the actions of Dominic Cummings. Undertaking a long tedious car journey while under the weather is not best advised, as your concentration and reaction times will be impaired, often more than just marginally. A poor judgment call when suffering from a serious dose of the common and garden allergy, with a virus as unpredictable as SARS-CoV-2, where patients can go downhill very rapidly over a period of hours. This is quite irresponsible. The only crumbling ledge I can stand upon will involve something ill-advised in the 1894 Ghostbusters movie, Crossing the Streams. Stream 1 being the current SARS-CoV-2 crisis, which is facilitating a global remodeling of society, commerce and government. Stream 2 being the ongoing tenacity of the anti-Brexit cabal, who are determined at virtually any price to derail Brexit. This was alluded to by Jeff Taylor, who highlighted that Dominic Cummings was instrumental in putting a spoke through the wheel of their plan to resurrect a further extension to the talks, albeit via an offer from the EU itself to save face on the part of the UK government. All of this is alleged to have happened while Boris Johnson was incapacitated with the virus. The pieces fit logically, for not only are Dominic Cummings and Boris Johnson marked men when it comes to the pro-EU statists, but they are inextricably joined at the hip when it comes to the Brexit project. The minute Dominic Cummings resigns, Brexit is mortally wounded, this being clearly apparent to both sides of the debate. With a suspiciously high number of Conservative MPs calling for his scalp, one must look past the thin patina of manufactured outrage, and consider the political reality, that there may still be a considerable rump of stubbornly pro-EU MPs that have not been flushed out of the party. Under such circumstances, Boris Johnston has really no choice but to back his advisor. There are a number of other reasons that could be made for Dominic Cummings' sojourn, all be they rather tenuous. Could it be that he was gaslighting the public in preparation for the lifting of restrictions, motivating via anger a stagnant populace comfortable with endless Netflix and home delivery? Or was he performing the classic civil service and local government tactic of going incommunicado during the critical anti-Brexit push, thereby making any engagement with himself or the PM impossible and delivering a fait accompli? Such Machiavellian moves are the staple diet of political life, and many an individual has been undermined by such a strategy. One thing is becoming very clear now. Like it or not, the paths of SARS-CoV-2, the EU and Brexit have now crossed in a similar fashion as the streams did in Ghostbusters, with similar disastrous consequences. For an economy already suffering the jitters from the near collapse of Deutsche Bank, the political and legal fallout continues apace. The European Commission has threatened to sue Germany over a ruling by the country's constitutional court, challenging the ECB's monetary authority. While this legal decision goes back to before the SARS-CoV-2 crisis, it questions the policy of quantitative easing, one of the fundamental economic tools used to cushion the effects of the outbreak. What is more telling is the total lack of cohesive economic support for nations ravaged by the virus across the EU, and Italy, having bore the brunt of the outbreak, is in no mood to shut up and swallow their medicine. Which probably goes some way to explaining some of the more worrying evidence coming out the country concerning the outbreak, insofar as the high casualty rate amongst the elderly appears to stem from an earlier influenza vaccination program, a fact corroborated by the US military some years previously. This elephant in the room is of major concern to those that want to whip up fear over the virus, as it not only undermines the efficacy of the forthcoming mass inoculation program, but once again shines a light on the murky morals and ethics of forced vaccination, something the US Supreme Court has quietly approved of. It is therefore of no surprise that those bringing this matter to the attention of the public are being smeared, dismissed as fake news agents, and generally considered cranks. Furthermore, the number of doctors and physicians railing at the manipulation of the true pandemic statistics, be it through lax classification, poor testing regimes or economic motives, carries apace here and abroad. The threadbare official narrative, already showing considerable wear by the lack of uptake in overflow hospitals, is coming close to breaking point. It is abundantly clear that the true consequence of this outbreak is to drive social, political and global change, irrespective of the lethality of SARS-CoV-2. Well documented in think tank policy documents going back years, some of the emerging solutions to this crisis are truly horrific. From the social segregation of children to nationalization of industries via the back door. I've said it before, and at risk of boring everyone, I'll say it again. I am more worried about the social and infrastructure impact and implications of this outbreak, despite this nasty little piece of RNA being a formidable human enemy. More and more evidence is emerging both from the US and Asia of the effectiveness of early administration of hydroxychloroquine, HCQ. Despite this, and the lack of any truly independent blind medical trials, the World Health Organization has halted all of its clinical trials, based on a flawed Australian study. On that basis, France, Belgium and Italy are also taking action to limit the use of HCQ, despite the drug being safely used, widely prescribed and available for over 40 years. If you think the hypocrisy surrounding the Dominic Cummings saga is gross, this action is a potential death sentence for many, as the alternatives are costly and frequently unavailable, especially in the Third World. The partiality of the WHO is abundantly clear, and while it is vital that HCQ is administered early on if it is to have any positive effect, such stringent measures can only further cement the belief that the WHO, if nothing else, is firmly embedded in the pockets of the pharmaceutical industry. After 5 months since the outbreak was officially declared in China, we are still missing vital parts of the pandemic jigsaw. Patient zero is still unknown, and more countries and individuals are coming to the conclusion that many did some time ago, that this virus has been around for some time. The scientific community is still bitterly divided over the origins of the virus, and extensive postmortems on victims confirm that it manifests as a blood disorder, causing microscopic clotting deep inside the lungs and preventing oxygen being absorbed. This closes the circle over the mystery of why intubation was not always effective early on in the outbreak and why the predicted ventilator shortage never materialized in many clinical settings. With the withdrawal of HCQ as a cure, it does raise even more disturbing questions. Where does the line between doctor and patient lie when it comes down to choice of treatment, especially when HCQ is cheaper than many alternatives? More importantly for society, how are COVID-19 patients dying? There is indisputable evidence that any increase in deaths this year is a combination of factors, but I am deeply concerned over the multitude of reports that family members are not allowed contact with those dying of the disease. This places the terminal patient totally at the mercy of the care profession, and I am not clear on the official policy as to the treatment of those in the final stages of this disease. Are they just given oxygen, or are sedatives administered? How much input and control do relatives have over any final care plan? With the scandal over the increased use of do not resuscitate notices and the discredited Liverpool pathway, such questions, however uncomfortable, need to be asked. We have 2 weeks to go before some of the lockdown restrictions are lifted. How much freedom we will have returned to us is purely academic and a pointless discussion now. Like a cigarette burn on the thigh of an innocent abuse victim, our national psyche has been permanently scarred by the jackboot of authority, under the guise of protecting the vulnerable. It is clear now that the system as it stands is so utterly compromised and corrupt that the stench reaches to high heaven and beyond. This government, by accident or design, will ultimately have more national blood on its hands than any since the First or Second World War, with the exception of the parliament that approved the first abortion laws. Harsh words, but that is the reality that is dawning on many, that we need to be more afraid of our leaders than an insignificant, invisible piece of RNA. With the haulage industry, amongst many others, facing imminent collapse, the human cost of this outbreak is only just beginning to show. I'm just thankful that I won't be around to see the long-term outcome. Living through the industrial and manufacturing evisceration during the late 1970s and early 1980s was bad enough for me. References. Medcrum. WHO halts HQC trials. Jeff Taylor, Brexit plot. Dr. Judy Mikovits, Plandemic. Germany, ECB legal action. Copyright Rookwood 2020.